You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
The Flyers took a trip up the New Jersey Turnpike on Tuesday and managed to secure a much-needed win versus the Devils. Captain Claude Giroux became the franchise's longest tenure captain and set the tone of the night, while the team also got a boost from the turn of ghost of seasons past. Hey everyone, I'm your host with the most, Joe Gazarian, and I'd like to shout out Elon Musk for that Game Stonks tweet. It really helped me out on Tuesday evening.
God. I'm Matt Arenick, Mark Friedman's number one fan.
I'm Mike Zawisa, and I'd like to thank Pierre LeBrun for validating our mediocre content on Twitter.
Yeah, we're big J journalists now. We've clearly made it into that greener pasture with the insiders.
Two followers away from 100. Pretty close to his follower count.
Two follow. Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Each one. But Freeman, Ghost, G, Patty, Pierre, we got a lot to talk about tonight, boys. But before we do, I don't know if you guys realize it or not, but there happens to be a pretty big football game on the horizon. And if you're a Pigskin fan like me, DraftKings got you covered. The official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. All you have to do to enter is go to DraftKings free Super Bowl prediction challenge. Once you submit your picks, you'll get a free instant prize up to $25,000. That's not all, though. If you have the predictions correct, you also win the top prize of $1 million. Download the app now. Enter the free prediction challenge. Answer questions like who'll score last, and boom, bang, pow, get ready to make it rain. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to its players since 2012, so they know a thing or two about making big plays. Pretty good. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So use promo code THPN now and enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Tremendous, Joe. Tremendous stuff.
Very good. It's pretty close to your GameStop earnings there, so fans can.
We're getting there. That was. I appreciate it
there.
I appreciate it. It was a mouthful, but I'm excited. I'm definitely playing. I don't know about you guys, but I could use $25,000 if my my GameStop app stocks don't really do that tremendous. Who do you guys have winning the game?
I think, you know what, this is going to be heresy to say. I wouldn't mind seeing Tom Brady win it with a new city. But I think Mahomes is just too good. No one can figure him out.
Yeah, I just drove through that godforsaken state of Missouri. I think those people that live out there need another Super Bowl just to keep them going for another year. Ooh. So
you're going Mahomes.
I'm going Mahomes.
So I'm the decider. Interesting.
No, I said Mahomes too.
Oh, I thought you said
no,
Brady.
No, I said I'd like to see Brady win, but I think Mahomes is too good. Yeah.
All right, then if you guys both take Mahomes, I'll take Brady. I don't like him. I think he's probably the greatest quarterback of all time, but I don't know. They just kind of feel like the team of destiny right now. I will say the Chiefs have this ability to turn the game on just like whenever they feel like it, which is insane. I've never seen that happen in football, but I don't know. We'll see. I think Tom Brady and the Bucks pull it out. Back to the ice, though. We actually have a win to talk about. Flyers beat the Devils 5-3 and looked not bad doing it. There are definitely some things they need to keep improving, but let's go over the positives first. Mike, what did you see? What was your big takeaways from last night's game?
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway was this is sort of like the game that I wanted to see from them, to be honest. Like when I mentioned before in the previous episode about, you know, I didn't want it to be flawless. I didn't want them to just come in and just, you know, blow out the Devils and make it seem like, oh, all problems are forgotten or forgiven. You know, we just got shelled by Boston, but we're good again. Like, I wanted to see them work through their issues in the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. Defensive zone still wasn't perfect. We'll get to that. But their outlets were definitely better. Having Ghost back there definitely improved it. And their play in the neutral zone was honestly fantastic. They were really stymieing a lot of the play. So, and then they generated, you know, a couple goals on the power play. That's great. But then a couple goals at even strength. And, you know, you get the empty netter to tack it on too. And so all I wanted to see was that the process, like that they understood that the process wasn't good and they were still trying to work to what we saw last year. And I think that's what was happening. There was definitely, you know, that reminded me of a win last year. Like, I don't know if you remember the game against the Sharks late in the season where the Flyers like weren't necessarily the better team in that game through stretches of it against like an inferior opponent, but they kept going, they kept playing their style, and they gutted out a win. They got, you know, a couple big plays from TK and Hayes, and then they also were able to generate offense in the zone. So that's what that seemed like to me last night. Wasn't their best game, but the foundation was there. And with Kootz coming back soon potentially and Myers ahead of schedule, I guess, like to me that gives me a little more hope than I had after the 6-1 shellacking against Boston.
Yeah, it was definitely a much needed victory regardless of how you get it. I mean, obviously there's some puck luck to play, but like Mike said, the play in the neutral zone, the support that you didn't see in games prior was definitely there. They seemed like they made it a point to try to attack as a group, as opposed to they luckily get out of the zone somehow, a puck bounces over a stick, and then they're attacking by themselves and or just dumping the puck to no one. I think that was a topic of conversation in the playoffs against Montreal when we were so frustrated watching them dump the puck and Carey Price would come out behind the net and stop it and pretty much end that offensive attack in its place. I think we kind of saw a little bit of that as well. They weren't taking a look to see, okay, where is my support? Are they coming late? Do I need a soft dump opposite corner, hard dump to rim it to someone with speed? I think there were all things we started to see a little bit more of. I did see some cross to corner dumps, some strategic plays that were lacking. And then overall, like Mike mentioned in the neutral zone, is there's actual support. I saw a couple people regroup, kind of pull back. They saw they had nothing going back to their defense, which was nice to see. As you mentioned, it was just the fact that it seemed like they understood what they're doing before was not going to be something that got them anywhere. So it was refreshing to see them make some changes. And Joe said in the last episode, just keeping it simple. I mean, two power play goals were shots from the point, pretty much the same play, similar deflections from JVR, who continues to be hot. He's already tied his season total in power play goals from last season with 4. So he's tied with the team league 5 goals with TK. So definitely some positives to take away from that one.
For sure. I'll say one of the bigger positives I took away was, you know, that third period. Again, they got punched in the mouth. All of a sudden, it's, you know, it's 2-2 again. And the third period I thought was going to be a huge period for them to come out and really put their stamp on the game and just impose their will. Because, I mean, they're so much better than Devils on paper, but doesn't mean you're going to act like that way on the ice. And I thought they really did. I thought they stepped up. I thought that Giroux line was really good, especially through the neutral zone. I thought they showed good speed, great patience by him to set up that Patrick goal. You know, that's – who's the goalie? Was it Wedgewood?
Yeah, Wedgewood. Yeah.
I thought, honestly, he played pretty well, by the way. I don't think he played awful. I know that it's a lot of goals, but I thought the third period was the biggest takeaway for me because, you know – they've showed something similar against game one against Boston, where same thing, third period, they responded strong, but they were still giving up goals. They were hemorrhaging goals, really, in the third against Boston, and they were just able to kind of keep adding them up. And they took that and kind of did the same thing, but they didn't hemorrhage any goals, thank God. They really shut New Jersey down. But yeah, I'm pleased.
Elliot played well again.
Back-to-back games. He did. Yeah. He had some big saves early, too. Because, again, getting outshot very early on.
Yeah, I noticed that.
They need to reverse that trend, man. That's
They did the start the second, was it? It was like 9-1.
Well, yeah, I was about to say that. Like, the first period, you know, they take a penalty immediately. So you put the Devils on the power play. And The Devils have been good on the power play the past couple of years, even when they've been mediocre. Like Palmieri can absolutely.
Yeah, Palmieri's got a shot. He really can score.
Hughes is pretty shifty on the power play, so they've got some weapons there. So right away they put themselves behind the eight ball, like in terms of shots. So that was annoying. But yeah, that second period was like, it was arguably the best period they've played all season until the final 5 minutes or whatever. Like that was what was so frustrating about it. That like. They played almost a flawless period, and then the Devils scored on their only two chances, like, to tie it at that point. And it's on plays that can't happen. Like, one breakdown per game, all right, fine. But, like, back-to-back breakdowns on goals, like, Provorov, God love him, like, he has been an absolute horse recently. And he was, again, on Tuesday night, you know, over 27 minutes played, a couple assists, he was out there. They were basically like double shifting him at the end of the game. He got the empty netter too. So great game by him. But on that play where they called the penalty on him, I agree it was kind of a soft interference call. We've seen that get ignored all season. So I get that. But like, you can't just stop playing. Like, why? Like, he just put his hands up and stopped moving. And then Elliott stopped playing goalie on that play. Like, that, those type of things can't happen. You definitely can't follow it up with another bad shift, you know, can like three bad shifts in a row that also result in a goal. So that was frustrating. And I was worried that the game was about to turn there. But like you said, Joe, they came out in the third. Devils had some nice chances right away, but they held the fort and then they went down and they went to work in the offensive zone. And those two goals they scored were really, I mean, it was a great forecheck by Lawton on the Farabee one, like a big hit on the wall. Takes the puck away. Lindblom forces a turnover. Lawton keeps it simple, like you guys were begging for last time. And then Farabee puts it in an empty net, basically. And then same thing with the Patrick goal. Like, Patrick Konechny, incredible on the forecheck. Patrick takes a puck away, gets it to G, and then we know what he can do when he has time and space. So those are the plays. We saw that so often last year. Yeah, the Flyers were fun to watch when they scored off the rush and stuff like that, but a lot of their goals were coming from, you know, hard work plays right around the behind the net and just getting it to the front of the net and guys just pounce on rebounds. So I thought that was, I agree, Joe. I thought that third period was very encouraging.
Matt, why don't you touch on some, what of one of your more negative takeaways was, or something they have to work on moving forward? I thought, Mike, you did a great job highlighting pretty much all of mine. So I want to hear what yours was, Matt, because that was a very good point. Very succinct, Mike.
Yeah, and before I do that, I just want to quickly touch on, it was nice to see Ghost back in the lineup, played over 20 minutes.
We didn't even talk about that yet.
Forgot about that guy. He's pretty good.
21 minutes, yeah, playing with Provi. He did look like he slowed down in the third, and he had some kind of tough turnovers, some backhands through the center of the ice in the defensive zone, which you never like to see as a defenseman. But I'm willing to give him a pass, especially based on what I'm about to touch on, which is the defense, specifically Hague and Braun. I mean, we talked about it the last couple of years that Robert Hague, statistically speaking, is one of the worst defensemen in the NHL. That's an objective statement. It's not like I don't like the guy. He seems like a great guy, great locker room kind of person, potentially. I have no idea. Either way, Hague and Braun, their regression this season has been beyond noticeable. Hague, I don't know if he put on like 20 pounds and he can't skate, but watching him go back for pucks and then like seeing the player behind him just gain ground as if he's moving in cement. And then the other issue is everyone talks about on Twitter is he does not take a look before he gets the puck. He is just tunnel vision. I get puck, I rim around boards, or I throw it to someone on the other team. And we're at the point now where if we're talking about both of those players and our ability to not only just be a contender, but let alone just try to make the playoffs and compete on a nightly basis against better teams, as we've seen, like, we honestly cannot have them both in the lineup, in my opinion, let alone playing 15, 16 minutes a night for the team. It's just so bad. It's icings. It's their breakouts. It's their communication and just overall speed and ability at this point. And I hate to sound super negative after a great kind of response from the team, but I think it's pretty obvious at this point that, I mean, I'm hoping Thursday night we see Gus in for Hague at least. Because I know they probably have the brawn. He's a veteran type of mindset. He's probably not coming out of the lineup yet. But for God's sake, I mean, unless Haig has some pictures on AV or Michel Therrien, I have no idea. I have no idea like what it's going to take for him to be out of the lineup.
Yeah, not the strongest showing from the back end. I agree. It'd be nice if we could see Gus in for Haig, but Braun. I guess Braun also isn't. He's such a big part of the penalty kill. I don't think they're really going to take him out. They love putting him out on the PK.
And he's a righty. They like that left hand right hand combo. So.
Yeah. I'm personally a big fan of that too. If you can get it, but if at the end of the day, your best defense, and we're all left-handed, so be it. You just roll with it. We'll see. I know you guys were kicking around some trades in the group chat. We'll get to that when we get to the around the league. But I'm assuming Hart gets the start, obviously, for the next game. Anything you want to touch on next game that you want to see that maybe you didn't see on Tuesday night?
I agree with Matt. Like, I totally understand how people are writing off Gustafson at this point. Because he was brutal against Boston in both games. I mean, there's no other way to say it. But if you're looking at like overall skill set and tools, like he's faster than Haig. He is generally better breaking the puck out than Haig. Like
they're keying in on that, right? Too. Yeah, we talked about.
Yeah, they're keying in on that because he's not playing with anybody who can also. You can't put him with Braun or Haig and expect them to not be pressured constantly because he's the only guy that can break the puck out. So maybe they can look at putting him with Sanheim, like maybe, or Friedman even. But like, Matt, I totally agree with you in terms of Haig. Like, there was at least three plays that happened in game where he got the puck with time and space behind the net and then just fired a tape to tape pass to the other team at the blue line.
On the blue line, yeah. I remember that exact play.
And I watched it, and I was like, oh, my God, Matt's going to have a field day with that. And it's true. Like, that – it's annoying when your players blindly rim the puck up the wall or they try to clear and it's a soft clear and the, you know, team keeps it at the blue line. That's, you know, that's annoying. It sucks, but it happens. That's the game. When you have time and space and you just, like – he didn't take a slap shot. He didn't like lift it. He just threw one right to the guy. Like, that is so much more than just like, he might not be the most skilled player. Like, he's just not seeing the game well at all right now. He's not even seeing it like not well. He's just not seeing it at all. And that's
because he's not taking a look.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not doing anything you're taught to do as a defenseman. I mean, through the first six games, even before that game, like, I felt like every time I turned on the game, he's icing the puck.
Yeah, yeah. And there was one that led directly to a goal, too, I think in the Boston game, maybe. Or maybe it was Buffalo. But, yeah, I do agree. Like, maybe they're not going to change up the pairs after a win. But I do think it'd be cool to see Gustafson back in, get a chance with Friedman. I feel like that pair would be a little better, maybe. And I don't think we're going to get Myers back for this game Thursday. No. But I would not be shocked if he's available for the second game against the Islanders or even the like that following week or whatever. It seems like he's ahead of schedule, which is awesome. Same thing with Coots, definitely ahead of schedule.
Last quick thing, Joe, then I'll let you take it away, is
sure.
I do want to touch on offensive turnovers at our own blue line. That was a theme in the last game as well.
Yeah.
Our good buddy Jake, I mean, it's not to single him out. A lot of people did it, but I mean, that's just, again, something every coach at every level harps on is no turnovers at your own blue line. The Devils have some speed. They look pretty good in transition, especially Gusev and Hughes. They have some good chemistry there. That's just something where, like, I'm not a proponent of getting in deep, but if you're being pressured at the blue line, like, we're not trying to make a move at the blue line in transition and turning it the other way. So that's going to be something I'm looking for in Thursday night's game to see, like you said, as a continuation of the process, to see if that's something that they're making adjustments and trying to prevent from happening.
Yeah, I'll say this real quick before we move on. The biggest thing I'm looking for for Thursday night's game is going to be Carter Hart. I'm going to look and see what kind of response he's got because, you know, we touched on how frustrated he is, and we joked about like what's going through his head when he sees all of the horrible just team defense in front of him. I'm excited to see what he kind of does, because he, you know, just going back to the playoffs, whenever he had a bad outing or he wasn't at his best, he always followed it up with a supreme performance. So I'm excited to see what he's got coming out Thursday night. Definitely some just, you know, blah kind of stuff. Overall, though, I think we all agree it's a game you can definitely build off of.
Shout out to Giroux, too, again. I got shout out to the captain. We didn't really go into that. I guess we're under.
That's a crazy stat to hear.
Longest tenured Flyers captain. Like, that's awesome. I thought he played. He clearly looked like he, you know, that game meant something to him. And, like,
two assists, right?
Yeah, two assists. He probably could have had the goal, but. Yeah, and I think Patty tried to feed him the empty netter too, which I don't know if you guys caught that. He looked back at him, like slammed his stick a little bit. He was kind of pissed.
Yeah, I think it was because the pass went his skates.
Yeah. But yeah. No, incredible. I think the three of us are, no question, we're big Giroux guys. We don't necessarily get the hate or whatever. So yeah, my favorite player to watch on the Flyers in my lifetime, at least. And just feel good for him. Hopefully this is the year. I don't know.
It'd be pretty nice. it just blows my mind that he's been captain for that long, because it doesn't feel like that long. But it's a crazy stat. And hey, man, well deserved. I know he gets a lot of shit sometimes because he's maybe not the most vocal guy in the media, but he's definitely really vocal in the locker room. I think a lot of the guys mentioned that. And you know, he's also a leader that leads by example a lot of the time. So yeah. It's actually my favorite kind of leadership.
Yeah, that performance too. I think that just shows you has his pulse kind of on the team. He knew that was kind of an inflection point in the season, despite it only being six games in. I mean, it is a shortened season, and he came out. And I think the biggest play that showed that was the one later in the game. I think we had just maybe taken the two-goal lead, and he beat Severson to the puck on the forecheck, bodied him off, held him off. He's draped all over him, and then Severson with the classic cross check down the back of the pants and tripped him. I don't know what we want to call that, cross checked him down, and drew a penalty. So, I mean, that's just like Joe mentioned in the last episode, like that's the effort we're talking about, in that the game is quote unquote kind of almost over, but you're still going out there and you're still making the other team's night hell. So,
yeah. I think it's a good point you just touched on. It's only been a couple of games. Really, it only has been a couple of games. For I think eight games is the max of any team's played, and kind of feels like we've already seen months worth of hockey. But I wanted to ask you guys, what are the biggest kind of let's take a quick trip around the league. What are some of the biggest surprises or letdowns that you've seen thus far? I'll go first. I guess my biggest surprise is, and Mike, you actually talked about this in when it was just me and you, and your hot take was Vancouver being as bad as they are. I really thought they were going to be primed for another run. I bought into the Thatcher Demko hype, I guess, and Holtby, he's a good goalie. I guess not, though. Maybe losing Markstrom was a bigger deal, or Tanev was losing him was a big deal, or just bigger than anyone realized. I was surprised at how bad they were doing. You have him missing the playoffs, Mike. That's a pretty good hot take right now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it was paired with your Canadiens winning the division and then winning the cup too. Apparently,
you had no. I said Anderson would lead them to the cup single handedly. Is what I said. Yeah. So
he has been playing well so far.
He has been playing well. No, yeah, that Canucks team is. You know, they were. They weren't like PDO darlings last year, but they definitely benefited from being above the mean. And then their power play really carried them. And Jacob Markstrom he probably should have been in the running for Vezina last year, to be honest. He was really good for that team. So, yeah, weird though to see how mediocre they've been. There's been, that's kind of been the case for a lot of these teams. Matt, I know, you and I were talking about Colorado a bit. You want to touch on that?
Yeah, some parallels there for sure. I'm actually living in Colorado with two Avs fans. Can't watch the games out here, which is miraculous. Can't watch them and have NHL.com, and you can't watch them on there because of blackout. So NHL doing a great job on that end. But the point is, yeah, they've struggled. I think they were kind of similar record, maybe 3-3 before last night's kind of blowout win that they had. And they have a very deep lineup. I mean, there really isn't a weakness I can point to in that lineup. I mean, that defense is definitely better than ours and top to bottom, in my opinion. I think we might have the edge in goalie slightly. But yeah, they struggled. And I think last night for them, similar to us, maybe in a bigger way for them, though, was a step in the right direction to kind of getting back on track. I mean, they just have so much skill on that team. It's crazy when you look at that lineup and then you look at their record. So interested to see them get back on track. And then some other big news, former Flyer Wayne Simmonds picked up his 100th power play goal for the Leafs. I believe he had two in that game most recently. So happy for him. I know he's had some tough seasons the last couple of years, but I think this is a good role for him where he's kind of like a power play specialist playing fourth line minutes where teams aren't expecting to get kind of middle six production out of him at this stage in his career. So happy for the Wayne train.
Yeah, sorry, Joe, go ahead. I've cut you off a couple times.
One of my all-time favorite Flyers. That's it.
Absolutely.
That's the tweet.
That's the tweet. Send it. I'll do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
No, I was just going to say, you guys know I've been producing that podcast for Jim Taddy, the Leafs radio guy for TSN TSN radio. He talks at length about Simmonds in a couple of his episodes and how he's basically like, he's like changed that locker room completely. Like the Leafs, I haven't been able to watch a lot of the Leafs play yet. I think I only got to catch their first game against Montreal, where they still kind of looked like that pond hockey team a little bit. But apparently,
shinny hockey.
Yeah, shinny hockey. Apparently, they've been just like a really responsible team, or at least more engaged, more physically engaged, and everything. And Simmonds apparently has a big role in that. So I'm happy for him. It definitely didn't work out for him in New Jersey. I think the Devils were caught chasing the Simmonds of old, I guess. Like they clearly didn't see the regression coming, and
they pulled the Flyers. They got someone who's a big name that is just a year removed from their prime.
Yeah, yeah. that's pretty much it. And then he got traded to Buffalo at the end of last season, right?
Buffalo.
Like, he didn't even get a chance to like make that a playoff pusher. That was brutal. I felt bad for him to be in three. He was on the Flyers for so long, and then just to be on three different teams in a span of, you know, a season is tough. But he's definitely making an impact there. And then I think, speaking of impacts, go ahead, Joe.
No. I was going to bring up a new one. So go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was too. I want to hear what your new one was then.
It was Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Out of left field, the asteroid presses. Just fell down to Earth. What's yours?
I was going to say, yeah, speaking of making a difference, we've got Lane and Dubois making the swap. Let's do the Penguins one first. Save the Dubois and Lane trade for last.
Do Pittsburgh first. So I broke the news to the boys, actually. It was during my lunch break when I was taking a look at my stonks.
You got the text from Pierre LeBrun, since we're friends with him now.
Correct, yes. Pierre hit me up, and he's like, yo, tell Mike and Matt. So, but yeah, apparently Jimmy Rutherford is stepping down as GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. They cited personal reasons. I think it was either Bob McKenzie or Pierre saying it's not really health-related. This decision came last night. They tried to talk to him about it again this morning, and his mind was completely made up. So he is stepping down, effective immediately, and Pittsburgh is going to begin their search for a new GM in the middle of a season, the start of a season, really, which is kind of wild. I know you joked about Hextall, Mike, but that would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, confirmed. I did not want that.
It would suck. I saw our friends at the Tip of the Iceberg were saying no thanks on Hextall, and I mean, like, I get they're competing now, but like, he doesn't have to touch that roster. He can just let that roster play out this season the way Hextall.
Same thing did with us.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have to do anything. They're still going to be, you know, fighting for a playoff spot. And then he's just going to draft you incredible players, even though you're only going to be picking in like the 10 to 16 range or so. Like, he's such a good...
I would love to hear the explanation as to why you would not want him in as
every
that general manager.
every time the Flyers are on national TV, Pierre Maguire, he goes, I don't want to talk about it again, but yeah, Ronnie Hextall's got his fingerprints all over this team. I would be shocked if they got Hexie. I'd be really upset because I think he clearly does a great job when it comes to early drafting and development and having that kind of vision. That's where he really excels. Where he maybe doesn't excel so much is kind of afterwards.
But maybe his coach selections as well. But I think Rutherford probably watched the first couple games of the season, saw Mike Matheson and Cody Ceci play, and be like,
"You wanted to get ahead of it?
I'm done. I think I've run my course with being general manager, bringing in those two guys." So no, but in all seriousness, we wish him good luck and hopefully everything's okay on his end. And we
Hall of Famer.
We hope that Hextall is not the GM selected for the Pens.
Bring back Ray Shiro.
Did you guys see the other Philadelphia name that was tied to the? I just saw a chart. It was like the top 20 candidates for the job or something.
Was it a former Flyers player?
No, it's just a former ties to Philadelphia.
Dean Lombardi.
No, you're never gonna guess it. Matt might, but
Gagne.
I don't think so. No,
I'm gonna say not a former player.
Yeah.
So he was a front office person.
No. So all right, I'll just say.
So
you're not gonna guess. So I don't know if you remember, but Eric Tolsky was a writer, Broad Street Hockey, and then he was like the big analytics guy. He was one of the first guys to really push analytics in sports writing for hockey, at least. And then he got a job with Carolina, and then as a stats guy, now he's their AGM. And he's making some noise because, as we know, that Carolina team is analytics heaven.
Drafting every year.
And great drafting, too. So I saw him. He's one of the names on the list. And then also, oh my gosh, what's her name? Namita, I think that's how you say her name. She's another Philadelphia ties person who, big like analytics person. She's out in Seattle now, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, with their analytics department. Yeah. So. Yeah, a lot of Philly ties apparently to that job, and all would be nightmares actually if they went there. To be honest,
it's our little brother. You know, we got to make sure they're well fed and taken care of before mom gets home. We can't have them running around with no underwear on. We got to make sure the house looks good. Speaking of craziness, though, let's get into Pierre-Luc Dubois and Patrick Laine. I joked with you guys, but like, hey, Patrick, I know you hated Winnipeg because it was cold and it's a small city. Welcome to Columbus, where it's exactly the fucking same. No shots at Columbus. I've been there. It's a fine city. It's the Midwest. It's fine. But
I drove through that as well, and I don't foresee, and based on his comments, listening to Laine's comments was funny because you know for a fact, like, I don't know. I'd be struggling to see, even if they give them like a max deal, that he would want to stay in there for just a couple, like 100,000 extra, unfortunately. And same goes for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I was super surprised about how that played out.
Yeah.
Like, it went from like
his dad
no
is
one.
A, his dad is an assistant or something in Manitoba. And that's what an assistant coach. I don't know if that's for the Manitoba Moose or for who, but like, yeah, I'm sorry, Matt, but that could be a reason why.
Yeah. I mean, he just went from like 0 to 100 so fast in terms of like him. I didn't even know he was unhappy. We talked about it.
No one had any idea except him and probably Torts, I guess.
Even with Yarmo, I think someone mentioned it could have been the way that was handled, the contract talks, but either way, I mean, obviously most people saw the video of his
shift,
effort
yeah.
that he gave in the corner on the forecheck. I want to say it was against what team was that? Doesn't really matter. Either way, that was a pretty brutal look, and for them to turn around and get Laine and Roslovic for that, just at face value, is awesome return. But again, the problem becomes, do they retain Laine? And I struggle to see that happening.
Yeah, there's rumors that they were talking extension. And I think, to be fair to Dubois, like, it really does seem like there was something happened between him and Tortorella and the locker room. I read a couple things that there was some like personal disagreements just in the locker room and with the coach and everything, and he was feeling ostracized, whatever. So it became pretty clear that was going to be an irreparable situation, especially when you had Torts just straight up saying, yeah, we're going to trade him. Like, he's not going to be on the team. Like, when your coach says that, that's kind of like... And then, yeah, him going out having that shift and then getting benched for the final, like, 40 minutes of the game, there's no coming back from that. So, but I will say, in terms of that, like, Matt, I agree. The value, at face value, that's a hell of a trade for Columbus, because you're getting Jack Roslovich, who is not a bad player at all.
Former first rounder.
Yeah, former first rounder. He's pretty good. He wants to be. I think he's a Columbus, or he's an Ohio guy, so he wants to be there. So that's fine value. Dubois is obviously better than him. But then to get Lane on top of it, like, they might only get a year or two out of Lane. We'll see how that all plays out. But, yeah, that's incredible asset management. And it feels like Winnipeg, I get they wanted to get value for Lane while they could. But that's also a trade you could have waited on, I guess. Like, you're going to have his rights regardless, right? Is he going straight to UFA?
No, I think he's RFA again.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I think they viewed their window as being a little bit tighter in terms of, like, they could have obviously gotten a bunch of firsts or something like that for Lane. Yeah. But obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois is a very, very good center left winger who can provide you value now. I think they probably
– That team is big. Winnipeg is a thick team.
Yes. But their defense isn't that great. So, I mean, that's obviously something they're going to shore up before they get back on the contention trail.
And real quick, what the hell's going on in Columbus? Is it the water? Is it the weather? I was just looking back, you know, Rick Nash leaves in free agency. Okay, free agent. He can make his choice. Jeff Carter gets traded.
They traded Nash to the Rangers, right? Because they got Anisimov.
I think it was like the end because he wasn't going to resign. Because he was going to be an FA. So they traded his rights, just like Hayes. So,
well, it was in season, I think.
Yeah, it was deadline.
Regardless, whatever.
The narrative here is, why is everyone leaving Columbus? Because you have Nash leaving. Carter doesn't last there. What? I mean.
He doesn't even want to be there.
He didn't want to be there. Made it very clear he didn't want to be there. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois. Panarin, Bobrovsky. Like, it's just, imagine if they could keep all the players that they had who left, how good they would have been. I feel bad, man, because like I said, I've been to Columbus. It's a fine Midwest city. There's nothing wrong with it, but
that's
I don't know if it's
gotta be
with GM,
like,
or the coach.
Yeah, it's got to be front office and coach.
I'm thinking it's got to be Kekalainen, because, I mean, as much as Torts is a hard ass, like, the people in that room, like, the majority love playing for him. I mean, they all talk about it. You don't think so?
I mean, there's a lot of players who don't like playing for him either, like, who have been vocal
about
it.
Yeah, I think the common denominator there is the fact that it's typically superstars. Like, if he had his way, he would probably have a team full of Brandon Dubinsky's.
Cam Atkinson's.
Yeah. And Nick Foligno's. Yeah, who are, like, they don't see themselves as being above anyone else and, like, holding everyone accountable. And, I mean, even Anthony Duclair, like, remember his comments about how he wasn't even, like, I can't remember exactly how it was worded. But it was a very harsh criticism of a very good player.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I mean, he provides good value in the NHL, and he was pretty much insinuating that he is, in his opinion, not an NHL player. So I think there's just certain pieces that fit in his vision of what a team and a teammate should look like. And far too many times, it typically ends up being the superstars that are on the outside looking in when he's the coach. So,
which for a market that's starved of... Well, one, success, and then two, marketability.
Yeah.
Bold move. I wouldn't look at that Columbus team and be like, oh, yeah, Nick Foligno is the face of the Columbus Blue Jackets. I look at that Columbus team and say, John Tortorella is the face of that team.
Agreed.
I don't think building around a coach is the way to market your team, I guess. I don't know. But they've been... semi-successful with it? Not even really, I guess. Like,
they play a hard brand of hockey. They are tough. They play like Tortorella. So
they've got no young players and stars to show for it or playoff wins. Like,
I mean, they did upset Tampa the other year, which was
but then
four
they lost
games.
Like half their roster in the process.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm curious to see how it unfolds in Columbus, because clearly. You know, the common denominator, like you said, Matt, is their best players are leaving. It's kind of like Ottawa, but Ottawa forces people out. So, I don't know. Anything else before we want to end?
I don't think so. Got a lot covered today.
I agree. And I think the Flyers took a step in the right direction with this win. There's still plenty to improve on, but as the saying goes, you know, every journey begins with a single step. They got another game against New Jersey Thursday night, and then they Matt's favorite Islanders come to town after that. So join us Monday for a recap of the games. That's actually back-to-back this weekend, right? Saturday, Sunday, they're going to play the Islanders. So two just games that everyone's going to be looking forward to watching. In the meantime, have a great day, everybody. Take care.